Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
So, okay, Fanboy News Network, it's our brand.
Well, aside from being, like, seared on our flesh, yes, it is our brand.
But I realize there is an alternative name we could have used.
Oh my, what's
Well,
that?
Okay, now we could use.
Yes?
Geeks of a Certain Age.
I'm not that old.
Yeah.
We're getting there. But
what's important is that you believe that.
Well, yes. Yeah. There is snow on the roof. Yes, I saw the original Star Wars back when it was Star Wars in the theater. But, you know...
Yeah. I mean, we're not as old as we could be. I just came back from NorwestCon. I saw...
How old you can be?
Yeah.
Be all that you can be, man.
And I think that really may be... It's definitely where we're going to start tonight. I just came back from a science fiction convention.
Shocked.
And we talked about it last time I was going to NorwestCon. Yes. And I came away from the convention with a profound sense of disappointment.
Oh, noes.
Which really isn't how I should feel after a convention.
No, you should feel sick and broke.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I actually think I avoided con crud, too.
Dude.
I know. Well, I was...
Toss salt over your shoulders and don't look twice.
Turn around three times and spit.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, my problem this year... So, as somebody who's been going to this convention a long time...
I was
going to
say...
I mean, I got together with some of the guys that I went to my first NorwestCon with this year.
You, if I remember correctly, you went there before you could vote?
I was 17, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we were discussing it, and we actually went on a reminiscence walk. It was really fun.
Oh, my.
But, for me, a part of going to a convention is always, in part, about panels.
Yes.
You know, connect with the culture, learn new things... Now, yes, I've been doing this for a long time.
Yes.
But the panel track did not excite me.
Aw.
Now, I went to one panel, and we'll discuss that in a bit. But overall, I looked at the panels, and I guess for me it was, I was looking at things, and it's like, am I going to be making a good use of my time? Am I going to learn anything? Or do I have anything to contribute? The closest I came was a panel... on Hyperloop technology.
Hyperloop technology.
Technology that really excites me. We can talk about sometime. It's one of Elon Musk's pet things. It's a method for high-speed mass transit.
Oh, okay.
If done correctly, Seattle to Portland in 30 minutes.
Which is unheard of, but okay, yes.
But technologically possible. But it was against when I was drinking scotch with friends.
Well, that usually leads to, you know, fantastical feats and building bridges in India.
But I was looking at, they've actually, I feel, lost a level of, when I say diversity, I don't mean in the sense of diverse culture. I mean in the, it's, okay, great, you've got a lot of panels on writing. You're primarily a literary convention. Great, but you still bill yourself as a science fiction convention. Where's the rest of the culture?
It was kind of a one-note panel.
There was a, you know, cultural significance of Star Trek panel.
Well, yes.
But, again? And there was fewer, let's put it this way, I always look for what are we going to talk about podcasting.
Oh.
And a few years ago, there was a great podcasting track. This year, they had one panel that mentioned podcasting, and it was a home recording session that was, even in the program books, more focused on music. They weren't going to teach me anything I don't already know.
That you haven't already earned through. How many years have we been doing this?
Well, this is episode 65 of just this podcast, and we've done stuff before this. So,
we have.
A few years.
Yeah.
I felt, what I really felt was, it's, the ConCom is aging. A lot of them are older than I am.
Really?
Yeah. And... Well, some of them are original ConCom from when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. No. I totally believe you because, I mean, my wife's friend, sister was one of the original ConCom. And she's, like, you know, in assisted living now.
Yeah. So there's that. And it just felt like, well, you're doing the same basic panels. You've actually lost some of the other multimedia. And... Yeah, I've gone to all these How to Be a Writer panels.
Yep.
That was my disappointment. The other thing was, there were some bizarre choices. One of their guests, one of the great guests, was G. Willow Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Who I think they just underused. And there was a panel, Intersectionality in Comics.
Okay.
And you would think G. Willow Wilson, who created Ms. Marvel, who is herself Muslim,
yeah,
would be a no-brainer for that panel.
You would think.
But the panel was moderated by a friend of mine.
Can I ask who?
Pleiades is
her name. Okay. So,
yeah,
so
this was their name. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right.
And it was an all-female panel.
Even better.
One academic, mm-hmm, one librarian, and one comic book artist.
That's splitting the hair between academic and librarian, but okay, yes.
The comic book artist was a woman named Donna Barr.
Oh.
Now, Donna is an indie comic creator, best known for creating the comic book series The Desert Peach.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of this comic?
Does not ring a bell. Why do I have a feeling I should be happy about this? You're going to tell me about it anyway, aren't
Desert
you?
Peach is a comic book about a fictionalized younger brother of Erwin Rommel.
Right.
Who's gay.
Of course.
And leading a support platoon to Rommel's Panzer Division.
Right.
So, gay Nazis.
In space.
And
or in North Africa. But
and
hey.
According to Pleiades, I didn't actually go to the panel, but according to Pleiades, and she may shoot me.
Yeah, well.
But according to her, Donna was just a little upset the panel wasn't all about her.
Aww.
So
single tier.
And my concern is, and you know what? We're a small wave podcast, so who cares? I'm naming names today.
Hey.
Although
we do have a new subscriber. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're always so excited for a new subscriber.
Yeah.
I guess the issue is people should know that this is not a person who's going to, A, be able to talk about actual intersectionality in comics. And A, why was she on the panel? And B, why was somebody who could actually bring a better perspective who was at the convention and a bigger name not?
There may be other things in play here, but there is the, I mean, mm-hmm, one could suppose, uh-huh, this is pure conjecture. I will pull out my magic eight ball later, but mm-hmm, one could suppose that the more diverse person took a look at some of the guests on that and said, nope.
Maybe. I don't know.
So
it's great mystery, but it's to me, it was indicative of the problems. The paneling just wasn't, I felt, well thought out. And when I looked at the names, like, well, it's a lot of the same names I've seen in the past.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, and that's rough, because, I mean, NorwestCon, this is NorwestCon, what?
41.
41. And so, yeah, it is, it's sad to see it getting a little long in the tooth. But,
yeah.
I mean, there were other things, though, that made it enjoyable.
Yeah, well, again, I spent most of my time either doing various gaming,
mm-hmm,
or hanging out with my friends who every year hold a private party.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, several, one each night.
Nice.
To celebrate whiskey.
Oh, my.
Ending with, on Saturday night, the Robert the Bruce Memorial Scotch Off.
Oh, no.
I learned a new scotch this year.
Oh, really?
Port Charlotte.
Port Charlotte.
Write it down, folks. Uh-huh. Port Charlotte. But that, and I judged a Cards Against Humanity tournament.
Huh? That, ugh. Sorry.
Well, I had a friend, it's like, Jeff, you're a lunatic. Sure, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Will you judge Cards Against Humanity? I would love to judge Cards Against Humanity, or as I like to call it, White Privilege, the card game.
Exactly. Ugh.
So, you sit down and go, we're awful people. In fact, I have a ribbon that says, I'm a horrible person, which everyone who was at the tournament got. I also got an extra ribbon, I judge horrible people. So, there were some nice cosplays.
Oh, yeah?
I just recently started finally playing Fallout 4.
Okay.
I'm behind the times. But there was a group dressed as Fallout 4 characters, including a friend of mine.
Impressive.
Oh, they were great. There was one other thing I did, but I'm going to hold that for when we traditionally talk about video games.
Okay.
Because there was a video game experience at the convention that was wonderful.
Oh, awesome.
But I would like to slightly change gears.
So, clutch and a half?
Going from first to second.
Okay.
I did attend one panel.
Okay.
Movie previews.
Excellent. What's coming out?
Well, here's the thing. What I actually focused on and did some extra research after the fact. One of the things they presented that they had dug to find was information about what Disneyland and Disney World are actually going to be doing with Star Wars.
Oh.
So, grab onto your butts.
Grab onto your blasters, Jedi. Let's see what's going to happen next.
So, we all know that next year, Disneyland will open the Star Wars land.
AKA, shut up and take my money.
Right.
Yes.
Well, here's how much of your money they want.
Oh.
So, the first thing, let's cover the big thing first.
Okay.
Let's go for the...
Go for the big bag.
So, they are building a hotel.
A new hotel.
A Disneyland Star Wars-themed hotel.
Okay.
This hotel is very specific. It is... a stay at this hotel is $1,000 per person.
Per night?
No.
Oh.
For two nights.
Okay. But so you're looking at $2,000 for a couple to go there.
For two nights.
For two nights.
But each stay is two nights. No more, no less. Everyone that's staying in the hotel checks in at the same time, and everyone that's staying at the hotel checks out at the same time.
Now, granted, if anybody could do that, it would be Disney. But, okay, yes.
And the reason is, during your two-night stay, you are experiencing an interactive Star Wars story experience.
So, you're getting, for the low price of $1,000... you're getting a two-day Star Wars LARP.
Yes.
I'm going to go start saving my money now.
Yeah. You don't have windows.
Beg pardon?
There's no windows in the hotel. I mean, there's windows in the room, but it's not windows. It's a monitor simulating the space outside the intergalactic luxury liner you're on.
Oh. Okay, so Disney has realized that they can pull out all the stops... and the nerds will pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And part of the price is the interactive actors participating, moving the story forward over the two-day period.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Wow. Okay. Part of me wants to spend time in the bar just to see what happens. But okay. Yes.
And that may be... I mean, I'm giving you the details I've gotten so far.
Sure, sure.
And this is largely what I was able to dig after their presentation and go, okay, give me details. I want a podcast about it.
Yeah.
And they didn't have a lot that they didn't already tell. But, yeah, it's going to be... So, that's the first thing.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, there's more. So, that yeah. So, two-day experience, Star Wars LARP. I mean, this is the epitome of know your audience.
Oh, yeah.
Know what your audience wants and give it to them. This is Disney going, hey, the technology's caught up with what we can do.
Yep.
Speaking of the technology catching up with what you can do.
Uh-huh.
And they're not doing, I mean, they're not doing little, oh, it's going to be a 10-minute, there's going to be 10-minute rides.
Sure.
I mean, one of the rides is you get to pilot the Millennium Falcon.
Twist my arm.
But another of them is well, they call it a VR augmented reality experience. And really, based on what they showed, I can't think of what else to call it.
Okay.
And it almost would seem, so augmented reality is you're wearing something that superimposes over your reality.
Yeah.
And creates new elements.
Yeah, it's not a completely, your blast visor is not down. It is simply, you're seeing real world and you're seeing stuff.
So in this one, you're seeing a completely computer generated environment. But the computer generation is designed to also work where if you're pulling a lever, you're actually pulling a lever, but you're seeing the computer-generated lever while you're pulling the real lever.
Okay.
And so what they have designed is a 30-minute experience in this environment where you're wearing a chess piece and a helmet. And you are playing Rogue One-era Rebels, infiltrating a starbase disguised as stormtroopers, being led by a reprogrammed Imperial droid voiced by Alan Tudyk.
Okay, shut up and take my money. Just take my money.
30-minute adventure.
30-minute adventure.
Computer generated. Alan Tudyk and the actress who played Mon Mothma in Rogue One.
Okay.
Are both back voicing those characters.
Awesome.
If you get hit by a blaster, the chest plate translates the impact feel.
I wonder how much they translate the impact feel, but okay.
Yeah. So you've got that, and that's so. I don't know if there's costs. I don't know what the restrictions are. This was where they but there was a demo video of this experience. So they've already tested it.
Uh-huh.
They know it works.
Well, it's Disney. They're not going to even begin to hint about stuff until they know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm just like, okay, so far we have 2 days interactive space luxury liner LARP experience. 30-minute VR immersive adventure, and I get to fly the Millennium Falcon. Right there. And I don't know what. And they've shown pictures. My impression is, and I don't have solid on this, but implications are that at one point the luxury liner is going to land, and apparently it's going to connect to Star Wars Land. And you just exit out.
So you get a shore visit.
Yeah. I think that wasn't called out, but it was hinted. So
that is awesome.
That's the one thing I can't verify for sure, but there was implication.
We will know soon enough.
So that, I think, as you said earlier, that is the embodiment of shut up and take my money.
Well, something that I thought of while you were telling me this, mm-hmm. And it feeds back into the geeks of a certain age, shall mm-hmm. we say. We are for all intents and purposes, I'm kind of the low end of the generation that saw Star Wars in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It came out in 77. That was my 6th birthday.
Right.
Actually, on my 6th birthday. But anyway. But people in that age bracket,
mm-hmm.
we're not young anymore.
No.
Let's call a spade a shovel here for just a moment. We're mm-hmm. not young anymore. Those of us who did get married and have kids,
mm-hmm.
they're in college. They're launched as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
We now have disposable income and time.
Yes, we do. And let's face it, an interactive experience at a hotel?
Yeah.
Where if we're tired, we just go upstairs and go to our room?
Yes.
Yeah. No.
This Jedi needs to meditate for an hour or two.
Yeah, it's... I mean, here's the thing. Years ago, somebody had floated an idea that I thought was brilliant. And again, it was they were tying it to Disney. And it was at the time that Disney was building California Adventure. And one of the premier attractions at California Adventure was Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
Oh, okay.
And somebody said it was a missed opportunity not building an actual hotel themed on that with interactive haunting.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
And I thought for years, wow, what a great idea. A hotel where there's in-room special effects to simulate a haunting and maybe even have a storyline going. This is that idea, just done with Star Wars instead of horror. But if this works, and it's Disney.
Yeah, in the name of the mouse, thou shalt be entertained.
So what I expect is people to look, oh, look what Disney's doing with their IP and this interactive hotel. What do we have? What does Universal Studios have?
Oh, you mean the Universal Horror Monsters?
Yeah. They could do something, but this is what I expect to be the next wave of go-to and stay entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you create the experience in the hotel where it's a set thing, there's story, there's immersion. Because right now, I see other theme parks doing it once they realize, hey, there's money in them, Nar Hills. I also fully expect entertainment cities like Las Vegas to go, oh, so we build a hotel and we have a really great excuse why people will never leave the hotel.
Exactly.
And the casino can just be themed to the LARP.
Well, seeing as there, I mean, as much as people harsh on it, there was the Canto Bight sequence in the most recent Star Wars movie.
Sure. But, you know, look at other IPs. I mean, I can think of, off the top of my head, you could do Western. You could do horror. You could do, like, Casablanca-esque. You could do, pick a genre, you could probably do a hotel theme somehow.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other thing that crossed my mind is, let us fade back into the mists of time here, true believers, to about 15 years ago.
Okay.
And there was the Star Trek Experience at, Hilton.
It was the Hilton.
In Vegas. And that was a couple hundred square feet of quote-unquote Quark's Bar and two room on a gimbal rides with a big screen and exit through the gift shop. And maybe, what, 3-4 people in costumes. And that made money, and it was good, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, next, pardon the expression, next generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be really curious in the next several years what we're going to see, because Disney's pulling this one out next year.
Oh, yeah.
They're that, and I'm sure that there's enough in industry news about it that if people are looking at this going, how can we do this? They're already working on it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's it's going to be interesting to see.
All I have to say, though, is that from the perspective of the simulated hauntings, mess with my sleep and they will wish they were dead.
I'm sure they've got plans on how to do that.
Yeah, do not disturb.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. So moving on. Movies.
Movies.
Usually we are done with movies by this time in the podcast, but yeah, we had a lot to talk about.
We can skip over other things. So
yeah. So movies. I'm going to start. I usually ask you what you've seen, but I'm going to start.
Go right ahead.
I saw Pacific Rim Uprising.
Boop.
Now, I have some leftover crow here for you. Because you doubted that it could unseat Black Panther.
You're right.
And
you're right.
It did.
Yes, it did. I underestimated the power of the nerd, and you're right, I was wrong. Yeah, well done.
Here's the thing I like. And I heard an interview with him beforehand. This was John Boyega's production company.
Yes.
This movie happened because John Boyega decided, I really want to make a Pacific Rim sequel.
Yes.
And thanks to the power of Star Wars, I have the clout.
Thanks to the check signed by George Lucas, I
Well, Kathleen Kennedy, but still.
My point being.
So I felt it was a good sequel.
Good.
And
do you need to have seen the first one?
I think you do. Okay. That's my one thing, is I was watching it and thinking, you probably could, if all you really want to see is giant robots fighting giant monsters, that itch will be satisfied.
Hey, sometimes that's all you need.
But there are story nuances that they don't necessarily go into depth explaining certain characters' relationships, because if you saw the first movie, they're clear.
Oh, okay.
I don't think anything was obfuscated. It's just they did the shorthand of, if you saw Pacific Rim and you followed the plot, then when you're introduced to characters, even new characters, because of their relationship clearly to old characters, you understand other relationships.
Well, somebody shows up with the last name Pentecost, you're going to know that they're related to, yeah.
Yeah, and to understand his relationship with Mako.
Oh, yeah.
Really is not explained explicitly till later in the movie, but earlier in the movie, if you already know, then a lot of stuff makes sense.
Yeah.
So, it was a fun action film, and they did one thing, and apparently this was Boyega saying, yeah, we're gonna up one thing. The big fights were during the daylight.
Oh, nice.
So you could clearly follow what's going on.
Oh, even better. But was it how Uncanny Valley?
You know, once you're at giant monster, giant robot level.
Okay, point.
It's at that point. The one thing that I think they kept for the most part was Del Toro, for the CGI monsters, wanted them designed so it could still conceivably be a man in a suit.
Okay.
And they moved like the first movie. So I think they kept a lot of... If you accepted the first Pacific Rim, you're going to accept this one just fine.
Well, willing suspension of disbelief is mandatory on stuff like
that. And also, again, there was just a lot of charm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, John Boyega has figured out that he does actually have the charisma card quite well.
Yes.
And is willing to play with it and have fun with it.
Good.
But he's also, and I kind of got this from the interview as well, he's also absolutely refusing to take himself seriously.
Good.
I mean, any man who's going to rock that purple suit.
Hey, now. That I have strong feelings about that purple suit.
That purple suit was excellent. But the fact that he could say, I'm going to wear a purple suit. Why? Because I look good.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, you know. And yeah, no, it was great. But it wasn't just a Boyega fest. He did give meat to other people.
Good.
So, and there was one point, I won't say what, for people who want to see it. It looked like they were going to lean into a stereotype. And then when they got there, they held up the big old middle finger and went, nope.
Excellent.
Nope, we're going somewhere else completely different you didn't see coming, which I'll give them a lot of credit for.
Well, and I think that might actually have something to do with our dear Mr. Boyega as well. So.
Yeah, yeah. So I felt it was, you know, if this is the kind of stuff his production company is going to put out, then great. John, you've got a long career ahead of you, son.
Indeed. Looking forward to it. So,
other thing was, apparently he's now, Marvel said, so John, let's talk about your superhero future.
Excellent. Excellent.
Speaking of which.
Oh.
So, Black Panther was, as we said, unseated.
True.
And it is currently number 2. Pacific Rim did get knocked down to number 3.
Yes.
By Ready Player One.
Of course. So, it's a Spielberg movie.
Yeah. Black Panther, what I read this morning is on track to supplant Titanic as the number 3 top grossing movie of all time.
Oh, that's sweet, sweet, sweet music to hear.
So, first off, yay, Titanic gets written down low because we have feelings, not good ones. But also, this diverse cultural touchstone is now just a juggernaut. Just sit back. I was checking because we are weeks away now from Infinity War.
Yep.
And Black Panther is still in the top 5.
Oh, yeah. No,
so our countdown to the same characters in the same movie, same characters in different movies in the theater at the same time in the top 10. Yeah, it may be the top 5.
Yeah, you know, right before, I think is it right before Infinity War where they were going to have the 31-hour marathon of every Marvel cinematic movie since Iron Man 1, back to back to back to back to, oh my God, back. No, I think I could just go and see Black Panther again, because judging by every single commercial trailer I have seen, it's taking place in Wakanda and New York, and that's about it.
Well, space.
Well, yeah, space.
I mean, I'm waiting. I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
The thing everyone's now talking about, we have after Infinity War, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel, and Avengers 4, whatever they're going to call it. They're keeping the title under wraps until after Infinity War comes out.
Until we find out who dies.
Because it's the guess is there was a storyline several years ago called Avengers Disassemble.
Okay.
And there's a suspicion it might be called that. But we don't know. That's pure speculation. But after Avengers 4... Mm-hmm. is Phase 4.
Oh my.
Now, what we know about Phase 4, there are like 4 or 6 movies currently on Disney's release schedule. Disney right now is putting out release schedules where they say things like untitled Disney animated, untitled Pixar, untitled Star Wars, untitled Marvel. And they're giving dates on when these are going to happen. And people are looking at all these untitled Marvels coming out. And they're like, well, what are they? Well, obviously one of them is Black Panther 2.
Oh my, there needs to be at least a Black Panther 2 and possibly a Black Panther 3.
One of them is absolutely Guardians of the Galaxy 3. That's been confirmed. And one of them is, the other one that's pretty much confirmed, is the sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay.
So those are the locks. These are absolutely without a question happening. Also, most likely, Marvel has hired a screenwriter to write Black Widow.
Oh, very nice.
So,
very good news.
The fact that Marvel, I think part of it is with Black Panther, like, yeah, we really can just do whatever we want. All right, everyone wants a Black Widow movie? Let's give them a Black Widow movie.
Exactly.
And so pretty sure that is going to be a Phase 4 movie at this stage.
Awesome.
And then from there, it's who else do they want to go? They've pretty much said, right now, they're much like the Hulk movie. They're saying Doctor Strange is great as a one and done.
Yep.
He'll show up in other places, but there's not necessarily a reason to do another Doctor Strange.
Well, I mean, he did have a wonderful bit in the very beginning of Thor Ragnarok.
Right. So, exactly. And that's how, you know, use him like the Hulk has been used since. You know, he's good as an adjunct to another hero's story. But at this point, no plan. But with the rest of the Marvel Universe, here's the thing. I have a theory.
Bunnies?
No. I have a theory about John Boyega.
Okay.
So I'm coming back. So Marvel's talking with Boyega, and I'm like, what other heroes of African descent are left that Marvel currently owns? Well, one of them is Blade.
Oh, that could be nice.
The first ever Marvel movie hero
mm-hmm.
to hit the big screen was, in fact, Blade. A very successful franchise.
Oh, yeah. Got to give props to it. I mean, I won't go so far as to say franchise because some of the later ones were a little...
The first two were great.
The first one was amazing. The second one was okay. Yeah.
The second one was Del Toro.
Still.
All right. You and I will agree to disagree on number two. Well, but the character of Blade.
Yes.
And when the thought of...
Oh, because two was the one with Ron Perlman.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's three you're thinking of.
With the 5 minute product placement for an iPod?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Oh. So I'm thinking, so this is kind of where I was going. Yeah, I could see one of those movies might be, if they're talking to Boyega,
mm-hmm.
that would be my money that they're looking at rebooting Blade into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And you know who would be a great character to bring into that? Doctor Strange.
Really?
There actually is connection between the characters in the comics.
I bow to your nerd superiority in this. Sure.
It might not even be the Blade movie. They might do, he was part of a team
mm-hmm.
called the Midnight Suns. They might just do a Midnight Suns movie.
That would be awesome. I mean.
But that also means their main enemy, Dracula.
Of course.
All I'm saying is Marvel has so much in their vault. And now that, with the exception of full ownership of Spider-Man, pretty much everything has come home.
Well, I mean, you say they have so much in their vaults. They've been doing this for 80 years.
Yeah, so, and the fact is, with Guardians of the Galaxy, they proved they can take a D-list comic book property and make an A-list movie.
Because they gave a talking raccoon, a grenade launcher. And a talking tree.
Who cares why it worked? It worked. No, what really happened is because they hired, you know, a filmmaker who understood how to do the material.
They still gave a movie to it.
No, James Gunn gave. But my point is, they can do stuff like that. They know where to vector.
True.
Because what made the talking raccoon work is the movie had the right tone for that character.
And that tone was, I am Groot.
Yes. So,
moving on.
Anyway, so what have you seen? What movie,
The only thing that I have seen in the theater since last we got together was A Wrinkle in Time.
Okay.
My long-suffering wife put up with going to see Bandersnatch Cumberbund in the Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
So she got to pick the next one, and she really, really, really wanted to see A Wrinkle in Time. So we went and saw that.
Right.
It was great. It was lovely. It was it hit every note perfectly. It was beautiful. It's been 35 years since I've read that.
All right. So here's the key question.
Yeah.
Having not seen the movie.
Yeah.
Do you or do you not agree with the assertion that it is primarily a kids' movie?
Oh, yeah. No, it is definitely a kids' movie.
All right.
That's the we talked about it a couple weeks ago about the idea of there is no competition
mm-hmm.
between Black Panther and A Wrinkle in Time. They are apples and oysters different.
So you're thinking that's good. That's good counter programming.
Yeah.
Give something for the audience that's not necessarily going to want to go see Black Panther.
Exactly. So here's the thing, and here's one of the things that really struck me. So there's been talk about the fact that the director, I forget her first name, DuVernay.
Yeah.
She's African American.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing, is that a person's sensibilities inform their directorial choices.
Sure.
That's a given. So the three Mrs.
Mm-hmm.
in the book, Mrs. Sure. Watsitz, Mrs. Witch, and Mrs.
I want to say why.
Who, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, are played by, and forgive me, I can't remember which order is which, Oprah Winfrey, Mindy Kaling,
mm-hmm.
and Reese Witherspoon.
Right.
Oprah is...
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously the boss of the three.
Sure. She's Oprah.
Yeah. Well, besides that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. So you have an Indian-American woman, you have an African-American woman, and you've got an Anglo-American woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one scene where the three of them are standing in this beautiful field. I would bet you dollars to donuts if it was an Anglo director,
mm-hmm.
Reese Witherspoon would have been center with the two women of color, one on each side.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Reese Witherspoon's character is the most junior of the three.
Mm-hmm.
By switching it, in some senses it seems off-center.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize that that's my white brain talking.
Right.
So... it was a throwaway scene. It didn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but it gave me something to chew on.
The first step to intersectionality is realizing your own programming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but there was that. And the only other thing that I will add is that, and we will not get into it.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was a recent thing on Deadspin, I believe, about the Sinclair News organization.
Right.
And seeing the video of that statement being read in the exact same tone, in the exact same way, over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene from the book that they translated beautifully into a scene in the movie, which I don't remember much about the book, but it terrified the hell out of me 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the children standing in their yards, bouncing their ball, and it's the boom, boom, boom. It's that same sort of,
right.
And it was that's part of what made it terrifying.
Because it's taking away personality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
all right.
The only other thing to add is that while that is the only thing that I've seen since last we got together, tomorrow night is date night, and we're going to go see Ready Player One.
All right. I have one other thing I've seen I want to touch on.
Okay.
It's a movie.
Okay.
It was on Netflix.
Ah.
Netflix original.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the movie Moon?
Oh, yeah.
With Sam Rockwell.
Duncan Smith.
Duncan Jones.
Jones, pardon.
Right. So, there's a new Duncan Jones movie
mm-hmm.
on Netflix called Mute.
Oh, he did that.
And it's set in the same universe.
Ooh.
Because Sam Rockwell does a cameo.
Even better.
Twice. In the same scene.
Excellent.
So, yeah, but that's not a big deal. It's not a big deal it's the same universe. It's just a nod. And it's very much a spiritual sequel to Moon. And it's set in the slight future,
mm-hmm.
much as Moon was,
yeah.
in Berlin. And you have the main character played by Alexander Skarsgård.
Okay.
Of True Blood flint.
Yes. Eric Northman.
Eric Northman. And the son of Stellan Skarsgård from the Thor movies. Yeah. And of course, the brother of Pennywise.
Hey, it's Eric Northman.
But the point is, Eric Northman, he's playing a character who is mute due to an accident as a child.
Okay.
So first off, you have Skarsgård with... his admittedly actually very nice voice,
yeah.
no longer a factor in his performance. So I know why he took the role. Oh, I get to pull out the real acting chops now. Yay. But he plays a bartender whose girlfriend goes missing. And he's trying to find her.
Interesting.
And he's mute in a society that has become so much more reliant on technology, the fact that he can't speak to interact with some of the technology is at times a hindrance and is at times an advantage.
Interesting.
But it also, it's, and Paul Rudd is playing a side character, American Army deserter, Army surgeon in Berlin trying to find a way out for him and his daughter.
Interesting.
But the point is, it's Duncan Jones doing that kind of slow, you know, he likes to do his movies paced so you can really chew on what's going on. But this is Duncan Jones doing noir.
I'm there already. I think I know what I'm doing when I get home tonight.
Yeah. So yeah. And
is it a movie? Is it a series?
It is a movie.
Okay.
It is a movie.
I'm so happy to see Duncan Jones doing well. I mean, yes, apple tree falling, but still,
it's only his fourth movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So yeah.
The other thing I was just going to toss in, since you brought up Moon, can we just pause and give a shout out to Sam Rockwell?
I mean, we can always give a shout out to Sam Rockwell. He's a great actor.
But I mean, this is the whiny security guard who stole the show from Galaxy Quest, which is saying something.
Yeah, considering, and you know, he frankly was the best thing in Iron Man 2.
He was the best thing in Iron Man 2. He owned Moon because he was Moon.
Yeah.
And on and on and on and on and on. But to have his origins be in something as the I don't even have a last name. That means I'm going to die.
Yeah, no.
And to have him finally get an Oscar, that's just like, dude.
That was just justice. I had no complaint about Sam Rockwell getting his statue.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would recommend Mute. Now, since we've moved to Netflix, let's go ahead and full-on move into TV.
Okay.
I just want to bring up something.
Okay.
As we record this, we just had the season finale of The Magicians.
Ah, yes.
For season 3. I have strong feelings about this series.
I'm sure you're going to tell me all about it.
As many of my friends do.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an article that was recently published, which was basically touting that Magicians is the best show that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Well.
And I was reading the article and kind of looking at it. And here's the thing about The Magicians. Its component pieces, it's one of those things where you look at its component pieces and you go, well, there's no way that's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
It's set at a school for magic.
Hogwarts.
Yeah. And...
But it's post-grad.
It's post-grad, it? Yeah. All the characters are college grads who were looking for post-grad and got, due to magical potential, were pulled to this college for magicians.
Okay.
It also has elements of Narnia, because there was a series of children's books that one of the characters was obsessed with that turns out they weren't fiction.
Oh, cool.
But the overriding theme of the series is learning to accept adult responsibility.
Oh, excellent.
It is not a story about children. It's a story about, you know, people learning how to be adults.
So Avenue Q with a magical twist.
Really, in some ways. But the other thing is, and this is where they diverged from the books, it is a pure ensemble piece.
Excellent.
Even though there was a main character in the books, that character, and I would argue he probably was the main character of season one. Once you got past season one, that became less true. And by season three, it is a pure ensemble.
Good.
It is, as one person described it, effortlessly diverse.
Okay, which means they put a lot of effort into it to make it look effortless, but yes,
yeah. Go on. I mean, multiracial main cast.
Good.
They treat that, and they treat the different sexual orientations by not focusing on them. Never, I mean, almost never talking about it. There's a character who is very clearly gay, who no one ever bothers saying, oh, by the way, Elliot's gay, especially because Elliot's mostly gay. But really, he's really bisexual, homoromantic.
And the fact that those words have now made it into a geek podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, no, it's not made a big deal of. A lot of it, they have characters. One of the actresses, I did not know until I read this article that she was a trans woman.
So she's a woman.
Yeah. She's a woman. But when was the last time an actress who is a trans actress was playing a character that was not herself trans?
That is a lovely part of it. And the only thing that springs to my mind is Iolanthe, but...
And that's probably about it.
And who in the world is going to know an obscure Gilbert and Sullivan musical besides, you know, nerds like us?
Yeah.
But
so really, in the end, a lot of people feel it's this generation's Buffy. But I say, yeah, it's this generation's Buffy without being anywhere near as annoying.
Okay, that's saying something. Okay.
Well, because if nothing else, they don't feel the need to gratuitously kill off characters.
That's a nice change.
Not to say characters don't die, but it's never look how shocking we are, we killed someone.
Yeah.
No, and it also isn't a feeling of, oh, we've hit a climax, somebody has to die. They don't have Joss Whedon disease.
Thank God for small favors.
So.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give a shout out to the series. It did get renewed for season 4.
Excellent.
And the Magician's fandom rejoiced, and the hope is that as the series progresses, they do some deep. They did an entire episode where they did their version. You remember the Ship in the Bottle episode, where Picard lives an entire life?
Oh, yeah.
They do a similar thing in Magicians.
Oh, cool.
Involving a time loop. But, yeah.
In a time loop? So it's Groundhog's Day meets Ship in a Bottle?
Not quite.
Okay.
That is that does not give it the weight they put into it. But in the end, it is very much still it's a show about people growing up.
Okay.
So I just want to give it a shout out. I think I've mentioned it in passing before, but right now just felt like a really good time to really focus. If people listening have never watched The Magicians, the first 2 seasons are available on Netflix.
Well, there you go.
And I would highly recommend it.
Cool. Speaking of things that are now available on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
Hey, here's a nice change. I actually have something to contribute about television.
Considering you don't have cable, that's all often a rarity. But
I was going to say, Netflix just released season 2 of Series of Unfortunate Events.
Right.
And you know what? Neil Patrick Harris continues to rock that role like no other.
It's hard to think of Jim Carrey, you know.
He tried.
You know, his mama is proud. He tried. But Neil Patrick Harris was the actor they needed for that character. Because there's a certain amount of gusto that, you know, doesn't come as naturally to Jim as it does to Neil.
Exactly.
And it's his level of commitment to Olaf is...
Oh, yeah. And... So there is that. We're currently wading our way through that. But also, season 2 of Into the Badlands is now available. And I just have to give that show some love. It is, for those of you who have never seen it, steampunk wuja. So all the crouching dragon, hidden tiger-esque, over-the-top, people flying through the air sort of kung fu meets, technically it's post-apocalyptic, but the aesthetic is very steampunky.
Steampunk by the way of Antebellum South.
Yes. Although they are no longer in the South in season 2.
Okay.
But, gorgeous costumes. Wonderfully choreographed fights that are so far over the top. They don't even bother acknowledging that there's a top. Martin Soska's chewing on every last piece of furniture that he can find. A main character of color. Who knew? Daniel Yu. Awesome man. It's just a wonderful, wonderful show, and I've been enjoying it.
Well, and here's the thing. When I discovered Into the Badlands, and I discovered it when season 1 went up on Netflix, which interesting timing. Season one went up on the Netflix a couple of weeks after Iron Fist went up on Netflix.
Okay.
And I like to think, here's Iron Fist. Here's our apology.
Yes.
Now let's give you something. Now that you've seen that, let's show you a good martial arts show.
Yes.
Where the people can actually pull off the martial art. Well, the lead is a Hong Kong action star.
Yes.
And it shows. And most of the non-martial artists playing main characters are dancers.
Yes.
So choreographing them to look good. Let's face it, you know who else is a dancer who's done fight scenes? Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
So,
well, let's keep going. Mads Mikkelsen, Christopher Walken.
Yeah, basically, if you know how to dance, you could choreograph a fight scene, no problem.
And also, Summer Glau.
Well, and Bruce Lee once said that he could. What was it, Brezhnikov, the ballerina?
Uh huh.
He watched him move. Said, 2 months, I could turn him into a master.
Yep.
So, yeah. But yeah, I agree. Into the Borderlands, when I saw that was up on Netflix, it's like, okay, the only reason I haven't started binging yet is that's one of the shows that my wife has informed me that there will be consequences if I watch without her.
I've seen your couch. You don't want to be sleeping on that.
No,
watch it with your wife. No.
So, yeah. I think the only other thing, anything else on yours? I have one other thing I want to cover on TV.
No, that's really it. I mean...
So the CW did an early renewal of all of their key shows. Season 14 of Supernatural. Yeah.
The thing that is undead is that show, for the love of...
Although apparently the Scooby-Doo... I haven't watched it yet, but the Scooby-Doo episode right here was pretty good.
Okay, that might be worth watching. It still begs the question, between mm-hmm. that and talking about Phase 4 of Marvel Cinematic, whatever happened to letting shows end before they become jokes of themselves?
I don't know. But I will say, speaking of jokes,
yes,
one of the shows that got renewed was Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
The DC Universe superhero team up to travel time show.
Because what could possibly go wrong?
And one of the things about the show is it's decided it just wants to be the fun show.
Good.
Arrow can be the serious show. Flash can be the adventure show. Legends of Tomorrow is the we don't care.
They're the Thor Ragnarok.
They are the Thor Ragnarok. And this season has involved a demon trying to break its imprisonment in time called Malus.
Malus.
Voiced by the ever wonderful John Noble.
The guy who played Denethor in Lord of the Rings.
Correct. And Walter Bishop on Fringe. So, and you know, absolutely. The man has a fantastic voice.
Yeah, of course he does. He's
so,
British and he's a bad guy.
Actually, he's New Zealand.
Oh.
But in the most recent episode, they had a situation where they needed to trick one of Malus's followers into doing something. I'm like, how are we going to do this? Well, we're going to have to fake a message from Malus. How? And then one of the characters in the background was watching Lord of the Rings. and they actually literally cut to one of the Denethor scenes. And they're like, does that sound like Malus? It does sound like Malus. Who's the actor? And they go back in time to the shooting of Lord of the Rings, find John Noble, and trick him into reading a script. So it is so meta. And the name of the episode? Guest starring John Noble.
Of course. What else would it be?
And the subplot was, well, so one of the companions shows is The Flash.
Okay.
They got a message. We have to save Barry. Well, what did he do this time? No, not that Barry.
Oh, no.
Barry Obama.
Oh, they went there.
They went there. Being attacked by Gorilla Grodd, who was there to make America Grodd again.
So the
B plot was saving Obama.
Are we sure that's only the B plot? That's more like a C or a D.
Actually, it was the trailer made it look like it was going to be the primary plot of the episode. It turned out to be a very small point in the episode.
Good, but but
the John Noble bit was delightful, especially because they had John Noble getting to speak with his natural New Zealand accent. Perhaps the first time in two decades. he's gotten to do that.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. The only other thing, being mindful of time, video games. I know we've periodically been discussing video games. The only video game I have to talk about, that I want to talk about, I mentioned I'm playing Fallout 4. It's Fallout 4. It's an old game.
Yeah, what do you expect? That's what it says on the box.
One other thing I did at NorwestCon, there is a game, I don't know if we've talked about it on the show before or not, but it's worth talking.
I remember, like, years ago.
Okay, so one of the few activities I really enjoy at NorwestCon is a group that brings Artemis Starship Bridge Simulator. And this year they got a dedicated room.
Oh, nice.
So they didn't have to tear up. They had a space set aside for them to run two ships.
Nice.
So for those of you unfamiliar, Artemis, it's a game you can buy.
Yeah.
You can go online and purchase it. But it is a game where you need several computers networked together to play.
Yes.
It is literally simulating the bridge of a starship. And yes, it is Star Trek-esque with the seal numbers filed off.
Of course.
The enemies are the Krillian.
Sure.
But the idea is you have five stations, a helmsman, a weapons officer, an engineer, a science officer, and a communications officer.
And a captain.
Well, the captain isn't a station.
Okay.
So then you would have another person who has to act as captain.
Oh, okay.
It is possible they have a thing called the captain's screen.
Oh, whatever.
But the idea is, You have to coordinate the work of these five stations to complete the mission objectives.
Okay.
And no one station can do it by themselves.
Cool.
So all five stations. The one station I'd say that is possibly expensive, you could go without, and even then you probably want somebody at least somewhere on it, is communications.
Okay.
But, you know, you need science to identify the aliens and get tactical information. You need helm to fly the ship. You need weapons to control the weapons, but weapons and helm have to coordinate their efforts.
Okay.
You need engineering to make sure that all the stations are getting that if stations need to be beefed up because of your situation, like, oh, we need better maneuverability at this moment. Oh, we need the shields to regenerate faster at this moment. That you have somebody controlling the energy levels, but also directing the repair crews.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so it's fun because it really does become a coordinated effort. And it could be done as a LARP in that, okay, we're pretending to be characters. But even beyond that, if you came in to watch people playing the game, even if they aren't even pretending, it still is. I need long-range scan on screen. Science, tell me what's in sector B4. Engineering, give me power to maneuverability. Weapons officer, load an EMP and a nuke in the tubes.
Yeah.
You know, it's even without it being LARPing, it's going to sound that way just by the nature of the game. If anyone's interested, go on YouTube. Look up Artemis Starship Bridge Simulator. A couple of years ago on the Jonathan Colton cruise, the science fiction convention on scene.
Yes, the Joko cruise.
They did several sessions in front of a live audience where they had guests playing the game.
Isn't that the one? It was like Will Wheaton and John Scalzi and...
Will Wheaton, John Scalzi, Jonathan Hodgman, Kevin Murphy, and Colton himself.
Oh, awesome.
And Wheaton was the captain.
Of course he was.
And
he finally got the captain's chair.
And there was a lot of smack talk between the crew because of those guys. But then there was another session where, like, Paul and Storm and Bill Corbett of MST was one of the crewmen, and was it Busy Phillips the captain, I think? I don't know. But the point is, if you want to see how the game plays, there are YouTube videos. There are people who will do videos of it where they will wear Star Trek costumes and actually have set up their bridge to look like the Star Trek bridge.
You know, I just have to say, for the record, I fantasize about having that much spare time.
And space.
No, just the spare time
to
be able to do stuff like that. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah, no, that's it. I just wanted to cut. So that was the other thing. And it's out there. I don't think it's even that expensive. So if you're interested, check it out. And if anyone in the Seattle area is getting a group together, let me know.
Yeah.
With that said, as always, Daniel and I would like to thank you for listening. We have a new subscriber, according to Daniel.
Yes. Hi, Christina.
And with that, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach us at fanboynewsnetwork.com. Just drop us a note in the comment section for the episode. If you are enjoying what you're hearing, please go and rate us on iTunes. And we will be back in 2 weeks or so.
Give or take.
And with new shenanigans. I have a feeling it'll either be right before or right after Infinity War.
How about that?
So, talk to you all later.
Take care, y'all.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2018 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.